Welcome to the Adonis Index podcast. I'm John Barbon, and with me is Rob Robinson and Robinson. So I got it right. I actually fixed your name. I put his name up wrong to begin with. You sent me a friendly email reminding me to fix that. And Rob came in fourth in our transformation contest. If you're listening on iTunes, go over to adonisindex.com and check out his pictures. So Rob, you did really well. So let's just get started with a little bit of history and how you what you did. Before, I don't know how old you are, where you are. You just finished telling me a bunch of stuff that actually is kind of, I think, insightful about how busy your life is getting right now, and you decided to toss this in too, which is interesting because I'm in the middle of interviewing people, and it seems like a lot of people take this on right in the middle of a busy point in their life. And I don't know what it is, but maybe when people get busy, they feel like they can do more. I don't know if that's happened to you, but it's just a recurring theme I'm catching from people. So let's just talk about that.
Yeah, it provides a kind of structure that helps to not only, I think, at the very least, maintain where I'm at and where others are at, but I also think that it is great to provide an overall structure for everything that you're busy with and sort of helps to facilitate all of those things. And then if you sort of have the energy on top of it to be able to make some progress and lean out in addition to it, I think that, at least in my case, worked out very well to be doing that at such a busy time. Like I said beforehand, at this point in time, coming into the new year, I was looking at finishing up some stuff to become a science teacher. I work in a lab in Boston right now. And so I had all that going on. And then I'm also getting married in October. So there's all like the wedding planning stuff going on with all of that. And I knew that it would be very easy to, sort of get lax with everything, with all the stress and whatnot. And I decided that this would be a perfect opportunity to throw my name in the hat and to use the contest to keep me motivated. And at the very least, it would mean that I'd maintain and I wouldn't gain any weight. But at the very best, it would mean that, I'd lean out some more and hopefully place, which I did, and that was awesome.
So, I mean, you didn't take it as a, you didn't take the sort of busyness of your life as a reason not to. You just added this in as almost like it kind of fit that way. It's funny because a lot of people have been saying the same thing. So, what have you done like in the past for training before you got to us?
Yeah, so it was actually kind of a funny storied history. I'm 30 right now, and in listening to these podcasts throughout the last year, which is how long I've listened for now, I hear so many of these great interviews, and I think to myself, whenever I hear them, oh, it'd be so awesome to be able to mention this, that, or the other thing. It's sort of like sharing and sort of agreeing with other people and that, and what so. It's just awesome that I'm able to do that now. In my case, I basically just overall, sort of grew up overweight. And, by the time I was 20, I reached my peak of 300 pounds.
Come on.
And yeah, 300 pounds. I can send pictures.
Yeah, well,
Actually,
yeah, for sure.
my dad actually just found, well, it was my sister actually, I guess, and then my dad scanned it. They found a picture that was taken like literally right at that peak,
That
and they
would be, if
found
you don't
it
mind
just
sending, that would
a
be really
month ago.
inspiring to put up on the posts, like for people to
yeah
see,
yeah
like the,
definitely.
I know it didn't happen within our contest, but just in general, like that'll really help somebody.
Oh yeah, for sure. And so yeah, I actually have two pictures that are perfect. One that's sort of close up and one that's kind of with me standing next to other people, so you really get sort of that perspective of where things stood. And yeah, and so, and that was, I was in 2000 and I reached that peak, and in 2001, I just it happened to be that a friend of mine that was a personal trainer had a hernia at work, and so he was sort of at home recovering and everything, and I stopped by to visit him one day, and he had out, I didn't even know he had it, but he had out that old Arnold Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding, and I took a look at that, and it just like struck me for the first time. I was like, I am big, but I'm not big like this. Like, these are two entirely different things.
Two different kinds of big.
Yeah, exactly. And because up until that point, you know, in my mind at least, all it had been was just sort of either I didn't think about it at all because I was a physics and computer science major, and it was just stereotypical, you know, I was just a nerd. Nobody, like, how I looked didn't factor into what I was doing or anything. But, you know, in the back of my mind, I'd always grown up, you know, with a father that was really big into Arnold and all that, and I loved all his movies, and, like, all just the classic, you know, 80s movies and early 90s and stuff. So, like, you know, just being big in general was, like, a good thing. And plus, I have, you know, a lot of my whole family's from Central California and Northern California, and just being big is what was expected. But it was just not big in the same way, you know, just entirely different. But I sort of had a, like, moment there where I just, like, realized that I was not, like, what I really wanted to be at all. And literally at that moment, I just, like, told my friend, I said, I need to change. And so he worked with me at that point, and the gist of it was just that he had me just do a low-carb diet at that time. And that was 2001, I think about May, and we went down to Mexico for a week vacation, and that was one of the last pictures I had at that weight, because I told myself at that point that I was going to, you know, make the change when I got back. And so I came back and went at it, and, you know, he had me do a low-carb diet, and then I also, of course, which is hilarious to think back on now, he, as far as workouts, just threw me the Bill Phillips Body for Life. And so I just, like, followed that template for working out. And I actually, that worked perfectly for me as far as being able to do something without, you know, tracking calories or anything like that. And I actually, by the end of the year, by the end of 2001, I was down to 220. Or actually, I think I was 216 is what I weighed in at. So I lost the 80 pounds in that just about 6 month period. And I pretty much stalled at that point. And by stalled, I really just mean that I kind of stopped really doing it. And, you know, essentially took the next year off from doing anything. And I turned 21.
Did you stay
there,
or did you, like, relapse a bit?
I went up to 240.
No, that's not bad. That's still, like, that's still way ahead over time, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Over the course of a year, like, that's pretty good to only gain that much, having been someone that, you know, lost 80, because pretty much everyone else I know always gains it all back for the most part. Like, in my personal life, that's the people I've known that have lost weight. They always seem to put it back on, you know, at least the whole amount. And, so by the end of the year, I turned 21, and at that point, I was like, all right, I'm ready to, you know, get back at it. And so I did, and I pretty much just did the same thing I did before, and I eventually got down to the sort of 175, 180 area. And I realized, looking back now, because I actually kept, like, training log and notes and all that throughout each of those time periods. Unfortunately, I only have a couple of sheets left from that first 6 month period in 2001, and they only have minor notes on them. And, like, I kick myself all the time that I didn't keep better track of that, because, you know, over 10 years later, I'd love to have those notes that I kept at that first period. But, yeah, so I, got down to that doing pretty much the same thing, but I really think what also worked a lot for me too was just I sort of had broken out of that stereotypical kind of computer guy lifestyle and was just generally more active. So I think that, you know, because I wasn't tracking calories in any real way, you know, I was eating less and also more active, and all of that sort of brought along the great weight loss that I got with it. But it was always a very misunderstood process, I think, you know, thinking back to before and also looking back at notes and that, because, you know, I'd get progress overall, but like on a week-to-week basis, everything was fluctuating and it never made any sense. And, you know, I mean, honestly, my understanding at that point in time was, like I said, I was just kind of doing a low-carb thing and, you know, whole area is just rife with misunderstandings that I know now that I did not know then. Mm-hmm.
So you put your head down and you got work done, but you weren't really exactly sure what was causing the results, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. I just sort of stuck my nose to the grindstone and, you know, did what needed to be done. But that was really what it came down to and wasn't anything else per se. You know, it was just persistence over time. Mm-hmm.
That's the key. I tell everyone that you have to be consistent.
Oh, yeah, which I understand now, and back then, you know, I'd just say, oh, I'm eating low carb. But, you know, I totally wouldn't acknowledge all the activity I was doing, because by the time, you know, I realized this years later when I looked back at a log from the end of 2004 and through the first half of 2005, that, like, I was going to the gym, which I know now, what I was doing in the gym was really more just like a pseudo muscular cardio kind of thing, because I never did enough weight, never did enough sets. Like, I mean, it was really sad when I look back at it now. It's more of just a move more kind of activity I was doing. It wasn't really training per se. Mm-hmm. But it's still valuable. You know. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's definitely valuable. I was going 3 or 4 days a week, sometimes 5. I rode my bike a lot. At that point in time, I was living in San Diego. So I was always going to the beach. I was always out walking around with friends. I just started playing tennis at that point, and I really loved it. And so I was playing like 3 or 4 days a week. And like, so I really think that like part of what helped me to get down to, you know, the like 170, 180 range at that point in time, which I like at my very best got to, I think, like 167, which did not look at all like what my 167 this last year looked like. But
talk about that.
So active.
Okay, so talk about that. I mean, that's an important point. I know we're kind of jumping around here, but
no, yeah, no problem.
Get into the, because that's a core. That's the root core of all of this is the shape, how irrelevant weight is, and how your shape can be different. So you look at your pictures now. Yeah. You know you've been this weight before. Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, my before pictures are kind of right at, you know, maybe a pound or two within the same weight as I was. And, you know, this was 2004, 2005. And I just kind of looked skinny fat, essentially. You know, like I had no musculature really at all at that point. And so I just looked thin. And, you know, if you're wearing, like, clothes completely, then you look fine. But
taking my shirt off was,
you know, if it came time to like be at the beach and I go to take my shirt off, I mean, it was just smooth, flat for the most part, because especially at that point I was at, you know, 167 to 175, you know, going down to it, not working my way up to it, which is an entirely different thing. And so, you know, I was low in weight, but not at all, you know, satisfied with my physique and how I looked and whatnot. It just was not a good look at all, and not at all kind of what I had envisioned for myself when, you know, back in 2001.
When you finally lost the weight, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, now, I mean, my before pictures, you know, I had plenty of fat on me, you know, at 165 when, which actually, I have a before picture at 165, but for the contest, because I started before the contest started, by the time that was, I was, I think, like 159 or something like that, I think, in my contest pictures for the before shot. You could, you know, I had flab and everything, but you could see that there was some structure underneath there. Like, you know, in the 5 to 7 years since 2005, I had definitely made some progress as far as musculature goes, but I think most of that progress has actually only come in the last 4 years at best, which I'll get to explaining how that's the case. But, and so it's a huge difference, because ultimately, like, you try to explain to people all the time, and, you know, I think plenty of other winners and that have been in the interviews on the podcast have sort of tried to express is just there's a huge disconnect between what the scale says and how you look. And if you're coming down from a certain weight, you know, other people may be hearing a weight and thinking, oh my God, that's too small, you need to stop. But the reality is that that's totally disconnected from how you actually look. You know, when we're coming from a heavier weight, you're dealing with looser skin usually, so you have to give that time. You know, you have to lean out more than people would presume you would. You know, we probably haven't spent as much time building muscle as somebody who has always been thinner and sort of
or at the very least, in that last run while you were cutting down, you could, there's no way you could have focused at least on maximizing muscle size.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, I can guarantee, I'd tell you right now, I've seen my logs, like, I was not doing anything for muscle size. Like, at that point in time, what I thought was for muscle size was way under training, like, completely. Mm. You know, the amount of work I was doing at that point for weightlifting was paltry compared to what I do nowadays. I mean, I'd kick my butt from years back if he stepped into the gym today. And it just, I realize now, I mean, I was never providing myself back then with the stimulus to actually develop any muscle. And so, you know, at that weight back then, it just, there wasn't nearly as much lean body mass as I have now. So it's just totally different, you know, thing, which is why I like and love that you have, at the very least, the foundations program for people to use for training, because, you know, it's hugely educational to work people through the process of both learning what lifts to do and what ranges to do for reps, but also on top of that, to just to come to an understanding of what getting work done is. You know, like you spend a lot of time, I've noticed, throughout various podcasts with people and in just the sort of informational ones, trying to explain to people that, you know, 13 reps doesn't mean pick whatever random weight you want and do 13 reps and then just put it down and, you know, watch the clock for 30 seconds. Like, when you say 13, you mean that you're using a weight that you're not going to get a 14th rep on in a way that you're obviously not, like, swinging the weight around or anything like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, that intensity.
The quality of the workout is completely dependent on what you do with it. Like, just because it's written on the page doesn't mean you can be pretty nonchalant or lazy or just sort of absent-minded in the gym and still complete every single rep, but not at all in the intensity or the form that it's supposed to.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that was the word I've thought of before, but, like, yeah, the quality of my body composition now versus what it was in 2005 is entirely different. And I think that's something that most people miss when they talk about weight. We have, as a culture, we're so focused on just the number itself, completely ignoring, you know, the quality of the weight. And I think that, as far as what I imagine when I think of, you know, a physique and what anyone else thinks of when they think of physique, is they're thinking of the quality of it. They're not thinking of the number, you know. So, like, and that's the whole idea that I like with, you know, the Adonis, is the fact that your emphasis is on the quality of the AI number, the quality of, you know, the physique. And, like, you spend a lot of time with, another thing is trying to help us get past that concern about, you know, the weight number itself and, you know, the whole issue with permission to be small and whatnot. I mean, it's all because that helps us to get to the point of working on the quality of our physique, as opposed to, you know, sort of these proximal measures that really aren't getting us to what we want. You know, being at 150 doesn't mean anything to me, really. I mean, what matters is, you know, what is my physique? What's my body composition? How's my training, you know, towards that? And that just didn't exist to me, really, in any real sense back in 2005 or through all those years before. And it's really become my biggest focus in the last year, is sort of getting down to the nuts and bolts of the quality of what I'm doing and, you know, what my physique is, and not being so hung up on the scale or hung up on, you know, really anything else. Just to me, the quality is what matters, you know, and especially with my, you know, with my AI numbers, I mean, I'm close to 1.6, but my concern is more with, like, the quality of it. Like, when I get there, like, what's my quality going to be as opposed to just that I'm there, you know?
Yeah, I don't want to, and I know what you're saying, and it's, I almost view where we're at or where you and I are at, like, in this discussion and where you're at with your physique is the final sort of advanced level figuring it out. So it's not just AI. It's not just a golden ratio. Like, and I said that specifically, not just a golden ratio, but the golden ratio for your height, right? Because you can have a 1 to 1.6 shoulder to waist, but it can be under for your height, or it can actually be over, right? The idea is, can you get it down to a fully muscled 1 to 1.6, you know, and change for your height in the, you know what I mean, in the condition you want? So having a golden ratio isn't necessarily having the golden ratio, so to speak.
Yeah, which has always been my answer when I hear people, like you said before on different podcasts, you know, some people have said, well, what happens when I get there? And obviously, you know, the first response is, well, talk to me when you get there. But then after that, I'm always thinking to myself when I hear that is, well, okay, yeah, there's so much to do once you've reached that point. Like, it's not at all over just because you're there.
Yeah, the circumference measurement itself is the first step. Then from there, it's how good can I make that look, right? Like, you can be at AI and continue to improve certain muscle groups. The ratio of one muscle group the ratio of one muscle group to another isn't necessarily going to change the tape measurement per se, but it can change the look, right? Like, you can still have more or less the same fullness of your chest, back, and shoulders, but sort of, you know, reallocate some of that effort that you're training into one or the other to bring one up compared to the other, so to speak. Or, like, work on your arms. There's so many different things to work on once you're there. And everyone can always readjust the type of condition they want to get into and stay there. It can be something kind of what Brad Pilon is. Just one of his mottos is, how little can I do to stay there? Like, how little effort? It's actually a challenge, or at least a little personal mission of his, to do the least amount of work possible to still stay in that type of shape. Now, that doesn't mean he's lazy. It just means if five sets is enough, then I'll do five. If I have to do six, I'll do six. But I'm not going to do the sixth if I don't need it, sort of thing.
Yeah, he's trying to be efficient about it.
Exactly, efficiency. So if you get to the point where the physique's exactly what you want, then try to, I mean, I don't understand the idea of doing more work for no reason. I would do less. But then, let's say you get there and you're like, you know what, I really want to improve my legs. And then start working on your legs or anything. So, yeah, you're right. It's never ending. You can always improve.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and that's for the people that want to do that. You know, for other people that, you know, want to just get to that point and to be that lean, and they're good with how they look, you know. I mean, like you said, as far as what Pilon's doing with finding out what's the least you can do, I mean, there you go, you know, work on your maintenance, and, you know, you're doing a great thing if that's all that you want to do in itself, you know. Like, that's just as fine as wanting to refine the look, in my opinion, you know. But, yeah, so getting a little back on track, I guess, yeah, so that was kind of, that's to me the big difference I was thinking about in the last couple of days and over the course of the contest, was the quality difference between what I was in 2005 and what I was this last year. Mm-hmm. And the other huge difference is I sort of fell into kind of maintenance mode in 2005 from that point on, which is fine. You know, I was doing school stuff and all that, and so, you know, that's kind of why I think it's totally okay for anyone who's reached their AI number to stay there and just sort of work on whatever else they have to in their life. And I kind of did that, but over time I sort of crept up a little bit, and it was always within a 170 to 180 weight range. And then in 2007, sometime that year, I don't recall exactly when, that was when I actually, for lack of a better descriptor, got the powerlifting bug.
Okay, how'd that go for you?
Well, it actually, it's overall, it's gone great, and I actually would not change it for the world because of how things have, you know, I mean, I have sort of a life view of, like, the road I go down, always, I'm always improving, I'm always getting better in one area or another. So, like, I'm totally fine with it.
Did you find
And I
good
got,
guys to train with, like guys that coached you up on form and intensity and stuff?
Yeah, so that was one of the reasons why I wouldn't change it, is the fact that by the end of the year, I got in touch with a guy in San Diego that had his own little gym and everything and did powerlifting and had a few guys that trained there. And I actually went over and started training with them. And, yeah, I mean, it was hugely educational to learn intensity and also to also learn how to squat, how to deadlift, how to bench, you know, like legitimately with good form and all that. And to really, like, I mean, it was a whole education in how to train that I don't think I would have gotten otherwise. And so that's one of the reasons why I'm very, you know, okay with having gotten into it. Plus, on top of that, I mean, absolutely loved it. Like, and I still do love the power lifts, at least squatting and deadlifting. I'm not a big fan of benching, really. And that ultimately comes down to the fact that at the end of 2004 to 2005, I broke my collarbone. I had a bike crash and broke my collarbone and totally messed up my left shoulder because of it. And the result was that, you can see in my pictures, my left collarbone just pops right out. I mean, it's out there for all to see. In fact, even my back shot, you can see my collarbone because I'm sort of arched back. You can see it kind of peeking over the top of my left shoulder. But it basically meant that my shoulder joint was messed up, and it changed sort of how my musculature sat on my left side and everything. And so initially it healed really well in the sense that I was able to get back into the gym and start doing things with my left arm. And my rehab went well and everything, and I sort of coasted with that for a while. And then when I got into powerlifting, everything was good. I mean, as far as my shoulder went initially. And so that went fine. But, you know, I was always really cautious with it. So my bench never really got up to anything impressive. And I guess, I don't know, I've never been a big bench guy anyways. And so I just, that's a lift that I'm not really all that into in general. But I did the powerlifting thing. And then that, the sort of, the, I don't know if it's negative or not at this point, but the thing I think in addition to the training that resulted in was I ended up getting into eating, the whole habit of eating to get big, which is obviously nonsense. And so, you know, I mean, you've had experience with powerlifting. And so, yeah, I pretty much did exactly as your experience was, which was, you know, eat to get big. And I went from the 170 to 180 range. I ate up to 200 in that first period when I was training with them. And I did a powerlifting meet, and I just basically low-carb down to 180 for it. Mm. And got down to that, did my meet, and then that was the middle of 2008 that I did that. And I finished all my stuff in San Diego, and I actually left San Diego in the summer of 2008 and moved back to Boston to go to grad school back here. And so I moved across country, came back here to where I'm at now. And for that first year in grad school, in the master's program I was in, I pretty much did that whole thing where it was like, be as efficient as possible. So that my first year here, I only went into the gym and basically did very little work other than just the main power lifts and, you know, two, maybe three accessory things, you know, like some rowing, maybe some dumbbell stuff or whatever.
And that actually is not bad to maintain if you're going to be minimalist. The big lifts will get you along. They're pretty good for efficiency's sake. You get a lot of muscles activated all at once sort of thing.
Yeah. And then, you know, I continued with my training. I mean, my deadlifting still went up. My squatting still went up. At the time, my bench was just kind of hanging out. I really wasn't putting much effort into it. And most weeks, I actually wasn't even benching. I just was skipping that altogether. I was only going in 1 week, 2 weeks, or 2 days a
Benching is tough when you have a compromised shoulder. I'm the same. I just can't do it. It's just all I do is create injuries that I can't heal. That's why
Yeah.
I exclusively use dumbbells for almost everything upper body. It's the reason why I put it in the programs too, is mostly because anyone who's got a messed up shoulder, which almost every guy who's played a sport does, right off the bat, I'm like, just don't bother with a bar. I mean, people can use bars if they have healthy shoulders. Like, if both shoulders are fine, by all means, do a bench. But as soon as one of the two shoulders is compromised, it's almost, I almost view it as a across the board rule, no bar, because all you're going to do is exacerbate the shoulder problem, and then it starts causing like problems with your back, and then like shoulder turns into an elbow problem, then a wrist problem. You know what I mean? It just goes and goes, and
Yeah.
it's not worth it. It's like, I know
Oh
guys
yeah.
who can't even go. I mean, I can't go near it, but I know powerlifters who can't do it either, and they just do it at the competition. Like, why are you still doing this? So,
Yeah,
well,
I
so anyways,
mean, and
well,
you know, with yeah.
let
So
go
the
ahead.
first year I did that, and just to get through, I guess I would say, so I was in grad school. I'm doing, you know, I was working in a lab, still am, and doing research and all that, and I'm heavily into research at that point, and so I have access to journals and everything. And I did another powerlifting meet, but I found that when I went to go low carb to make weight for the meet, I found that just the weight was not coming off. And I made weight for the meet, but like the fact that it just didn't come off as easy as it had in San Diego just confused me entirely. I just was, it was the first time that I actually stopped and went, okay, what's the problem here? And I had access to, you know, to all these journals and everything, and so I actually at that point started to look around, and that was when I started to leave, I guess, the idea that low carb is what caused me to lose weight, and started questioning the whole idea, which, you know, ultimately through many avenues, eventually I reached the point where, you know, at this point now, you know, I pretty much have an anything goes diet approach. But in that time period, that, you know, resulted in me sort of looking things up and all that, and then eventually, I think it was through another podcast. I think Brad Pelon did an interview, and this would have been a year or almost a year and a half ago, and it was through listening to him that I first heard about the intermittent fasting and or just fasting period, and then and I think it was through him that I found your guys' site. I think that's how I first found it. I've thought about it after I entered the contest and was really trying to think about when it first was, and I think that's what it was, which would have been at the end of 2010, somewhere around there, that I first like came onto your site and got a few of the podcasts to listen to and everything. Which I have to say, the podcasts are huge. I mean, listening to those are the best thing you ever could have done, and putting out the interviews for contest winners, another thing that's just awesome. I mean, letting the people that have done it essentially tell their story and help to explain that all this works and you guys know what you're talking about is huge. I mean, that, you know, as a researcher, testimonials are nonsense, but when it comes to helping people get past sort of roadblocks, I mean, in this case, it's huge. And it means a lot to hear from another person who's gone through this and has done this and everything.
Yeah, I know
And
what you mean that testimonials are nonsense from a research standpoint, and I 100% agree, but in this field, it's not a scientific experiment. The best you can do is case study by case study, examine how each person got things done. And
yeah, well, and
the
it's
one
so heavily associated with, I mean, having to figure things out for yourself, and there's so much emotional and, you know, hardships involved with losing weight and reaching the, you know, an AI number and having a physique you want, that, you know, you it, there's a that aspect has to be acknowledged, and it has to be, you know, explained and allow people to learn about that.
Yeah,
It, like you said,
the
it's not
picture on
just
the
cold and clinical.
blog and the numbers in the chart don't tell the whole story. We've got to talk to you to find out the whole story. And then it becomes so much more, it's so much more insightful. Well, obviously it's more insightful, but it becomes more real, and then people start to get it, right? They're like, "Oh, that's the story." Like, everything you've just told leading up to now is someone out there is going to relate to. They're like, man, he was 300, what? He was 300 pounds. He, did all this, and it's just like it all of that matters, right? And that can't possibly be captured in any kind of study. I mean, I don't think there's just no way. There's just no way to quantify all of that on. We could never get all of this out on. I mean, I don't know that any scientific paper on weight loss at all has covered people like this, like gone through and talked to everybody, then documented it like to this degree. I think they
Oh
should.
yeah, nothing I've seen.
No, I mean, I've looked at all the weight loss research. You'd never get this type of insight. I don't know why they don't. This is real easy. Like, so what? You just call them. Like, you hire a grad student to call everybody and talk to them and find out what really went on. And instead, you
Yeah, and I
just
mean,
get,
if most of those
yeah.
the subjects are coming in, they're talking to them to get basic info anyway. So, I mean, this is all stuff they have access to if they would just do it,
Yeah, I don't know why
essentially.
they don't. It would be like maybe because it doesn't fit into the scientific method, so to speak. And I'm as much a scientist as hard as anybody else, but the field of diet research leaves so many critical points out, and I think it's too siloed. Or at least even the people who get the fact that it's multifactorial, as a researcher, probably realize immediately how impossible that is to study, because
Yeah.
based on the way you would want to design a study, I don't know where how you'd. Like I think the final answer you'd ever end up with is it has to be an overhaul of their life. They have to get so many things in order that we're not going to have a nice, concise conclusion. What we're going to say is every single person, even though they all seem to lose similar amounts of weight and they all did it in roughly the same amount of time, you won't believe how different their story is on how they actually did it. Yes, it comes down to like physics, like calories in and calories out, that sort of stuff. But what actually got the person to the point where they could do it, those are like massively different stories, right? So, and that's kind of where the putting it on paper breaks down, because then you can never determine why someone failed and why someone succeeded. Even though the successes technically look the same in the data, everyone's success is very individual, right? So it's sort of, I haven't seen it captured yet in a scientific paper. Like, they haven't figured this out, a way to like show that the path is the same and different. Like, the result is the same, but the how you got there is individual.
Yeah, and I mean, along those lines, I mean, I'd like to take the opportunity to throw it out that, having done all this myself and having an appreciation for what it takes for me to have reached where I'm at now, I still feel like the work I've had to do is so much less than what the Venus Index winners have had to do. Just understanding the differences involved with creating a caloric deficit for a female to get the results that the contestants for the Venus contest do. I mean, in
Well,
my
because they're so
opinion,
much
they have to
smaller,
do.
they have a lower BMR, yeah.
Yeah. So for them, they're going to calorie levels that I just don't have to go to. I mean, for me, I can have an awesome, lovely 800 to 1,000 calorie meal, be totally full for most of the rest of the day. And if I want to have another, I can, or I can have a low-cal one, and I'll be in a freaking deficit. But then, that's just not possible.
Yeah, they're
And
tough over there. They make it happen.
So, yeah, I mean, they get all my respect completely for the transformations they have done, and because I feel like it's a much tougher road for them to, have the same kind of results.
Especially
But
being immersed in a society where it seems as though portion sizes are calibrated for men, not women.
Oh yeah.
So
The roadblocks
two things are
are.
likely going on with them is the society itself just is sort of built a bit bigger than they are. It's built for, sort of for men as far as portions and foods. And then secondly, they likely have men surrounding them in their life who probably aren't dieting and eating a full dose of a man-sized portion of food. So they're stuck there looking at that while they're trying to diet down
Yeah.
from a woman's portion.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I can't admit good for them, because I can't, that would just be so tough.
Yeah, all my respect.
Yeah. Anyways, we're on a tangent here. Let's get back
Yeah.
to well, okay, so
Sorry about
let's
that.
huh? Oh, no, that's fine. Let's
Yeah.
so you so
So.
you you're, you get into the so you decide to do the contest. We already know that it was just you're busy, but who cares? You're going to do it anyways.
Yeah, so the lead-in was overall, I got engaged And I made the decision that I wanted to go into teaching science and whatnot instead of getting a PhD and just sort of doing research only. And so I had all that going on. But in the meantime, over last year, because I have all this access to journal info and that, all the things that you guys are saying on the podcast, I easily looked up and saw that it was all entirely confirmed in the research. And that was huge for me as a researcher is, I'm all about the confirmation and whatnot and seeing the facts. And I mean, it's just insane to me that the popular culture is so disconnected from what the research shows, with regards to, and that was for me huge, the fact that no low carb isn't why I lost weight before, it was because I was eating less and in many cases expending more. And so through all that and sort of coming to this understanding, I actually at that point in time, at the beginning of 2011, I was at like 180, and I started listening to podcasts and I found these things out. And so I actually just sort of easily using that idea, actually did a quick drop from 180 down to 165 within the first couple of months of 2011, and was rather shocked at it because it sort of came off easier than low carbing had ever been for me, and found myself for the first time in 10 years at that point enjoying fruits and cakes and ice cream and things that just I had not had in years because, well, I'm low carbon and you can't do that if you're
So
on
were
low
you
carb.
AGDing then, or what were you doing?
Essentially, yeah, I was ADDing at that point,
Okay.
and I it was just amazing to me, and that was one of the revolutions in my mind, was that the whole AGD principles and just also understanding, and seeing the research, seeing studies done that showed low carb, low fat, whatever, if you want to lose weight, it's
Doesn't
the
matter.
deficit that
Doesn't matter.
matters.
It never mattered. That was one thing that the scientific,
Yeah.
that's the only thing the scientific community in this field has got figured out, is that it's irrelevant what you eat. It's less.
Yeah. I mean, that was, and I remember, I think it was,
I'm surprised people are surprised at that.
that's what I mean. The popular culture is so disconnected from that. It's amazing to me. And I really felt like, I think it was Al Sandoval, that said at one point in his interviews, it was like Neo in the Matrix. I felt like an understanding had occurred that just entirely opened up the world to me in a way that just had not existed before. Because I had reached a point where, you can only go to 0 carbs a day. And if you have no, if you reach that point, you're still not losing weight, then what's left? You're just stuck at the weight you're at, if that's your sort of philosophy. And like I said, I just making that change from that to, okay, well, if calories are what matters, then, I'll just eat less than what I was, and I'll enjoy foods that I enjoy and I feel satiated on, and I'm my qual the quality of my diet entirely changed for the better in my opinion, and to see basically 15 pounds drop off of me essentially was just amazing and completely at that point solidified everything. And then I basically stayed there for the next until the beginning of this year, mostly because, I actually had a long engagement, but over the last year I was doing, we're going wedding planning stuff and going to venues and that, which was amazing too because of AGD. I was able to go to wedding venue tastings and, planning stuff where desserts and treats and everything are all just available for you to eat to your heart's content. And believe me, I did. But I knew that, well, I'll just fast afterwards, or I fasted before I went to them. And literally, I maintained my weight through all of that. And that never would have been the case if I hadn't understood what was going on. And so
Well,
it's just amazing.
it's a good tool. Okay, so then what did
Yeah,
you
so.
what program did you use when you were in the contest? Like what training program?
So yeah, I got to the contest and decided, like I said, that I wanted to use it and everything, but also because I realized that you know, there was something underneath the 165, and, you know, the physique I want is can't be that far away, so I figured I'm this close, why not go for it? And I basically, for the most part, just did the muscle building foundation mm-hmm. and ADD through it, and I continued. I mean, we still have gone to wedding tastings and that during the contest. I still enjoyed, you know, all these desserts and treats, and just did my fasting. And, you know, only, I mean, I essentially do, I threw out breakfast altogether, which is something I always ate before. And I threw that out and found that I wasn't missing anything. I wasn't hungry, you know, and that alone cut off hundreds of calories for me a day. So for me, it was really more like a daily kind of pseudo 14 to 16 hour fast, because the last time I ate was dinner the night before, and then I just eat, I would wait till lunch the next day to eat. And that was most days of the week, that's what I was doing, and I would just keep my meals small for lunch and dinner on a consistent basis, so that I sort of always had a foundational kind of low calorie setup with that. But then at least I would say one day a week, you know, I'd probably have a longer fast, or on those days where I knew that I was going to have a tasting to go through or whatever, I did a fast beforehand or after to basically make the difference on what I was eating. And so through the contest, I was in a deficit despite all of those things. And,
yeah, so you didn't compromise the joy of food at all.
No. In fact, that's actually one of my principles at this point that I've reached, is that in no way does this contest or doing something like this mean that I have to compromise that, you know? And that's only because of that understanding, you know, the gaining and the losing. You know, and not speaking to anything beyond that, but just gaining and losing is based on whether you have a deficit or not, which means I can still enjoy, you know, the foods I'm eating. I can still enjoy these tastings. Like, my wedding planning does not need to be impacted by this. In fact, I mean, that was the biggest thing, is kind of in a covert way. Nothing in my life socially needed to be impacted by this, because if I was going to go out to the bar one night, I could still do that and just fast leading up to it or fast afterwards. I mean,
you know, I think fitness competitors and people who wear the suffering of dieting as a badge of honor resent that. I think they don't want to believe it can be done in a more fun way, because they cling to the idea of how, like, miserable it is, or at least miserable they make it. And then they want to show it and wear it as a badge of honor, like scars of testimony. Like, they want to show you, like, their war wounds of, like, oh, I sacrificed this, I can't go do that, and I want to chew my left arm off and all this. And but then in the end, they relish in how hard it is, and then they totally resent that, you know, we're trying to teach people it doesn't have to be that way. They don't want to believe it can be done a better way. At least, I guess I always speak from experience of hanging around with people who are like that. And I never say anything to them. I just find it interesting, the contrast, when, like, I hear what you just said, and then seeing them, like, they just want people to see how much they suffer. I just can't stand it.
Yeah, and that's been a huge thing for me, because I knew all about, you know, oh, you got to eat your six meals a day, and they got to do little meals, and you got to have your little protein here and there, and, like, all those things that just don't matter. And then again, you know, I honestly can't speak to the level of someone who's competing in contests. I can only speak to somebody who, you know, is going from 300 pounds down to my current weight of 148. Mm. But, you know, most people that are in this, that's who they are. They're trying to lose weight. They're not trying to, you know, be in a fitness contest or bodybuilding contest. They're just trying to, you know, get the weight off and have a physique that they're happy with, they're proud of, they're trying to hit the AI number. And frankly, six meals a day doesn't matter. You know, like that.
You don't need to make the mistake of mimicking or living the bodybuilder or fitness competitor lifestyle. I think you can still do it I think you can even compete in those levels. I mean, you're in good enough condition. Half the people in our contest are good enough condition to get up and win a show now. It's just proof that you don't have to live it the way they live it. Yeah, it's work, but it's not, like, wreck your life work.
Yeah, and so. And I've done that before. You know, I've been concerned about, oh, am I getting my protein? Am I, you know, and for what? I mean, it's so wasteful in energy and time and all of those things. I mean, you know, my fiance has a family cabin up in the you know, a lake cabin and everything, and when we'd go there for weekends, I used to think to myself, you know, I gotta take foods for breakfast, and I gotta, you know, where's my protein shake? And like I would think those things, which I realize now were ridiculous. Totally ridiculous. Like I don't have to worry about any of those things. They don't matter. And I haven't. It's been entirely liberating to be free from those concerns. And for the better, obviously. I mean, I could show you pictures from the time when I was concerned with that and now, and to me, it speaks for itself, you know.
Totally. All right,
But
so
yeah, that.
well, we're getting on to the it's been a while here, so we should probably wrap things up. So what's your advice for other guys who want to I mean, obviously you can give advice to just about anybody, someone who's got a long way to go, someone who wants to sharpen up, like someone who's lean and, well, maybe this, let's not say lean, but light, but still not happy with the look and shape of their, because you've done it all. You've lost weight, you've
Yeah.
recompositioned, you've, I don't know, this is your forum. This is your chance to give advice to anybody.
Well, one thing I learned years ago that has held me through to today for sure has been, as hard as it is mentally, trying to not get caught up in the variation that happens day to day. You know, try not to weigh yourself right away day to day. Try not to concern yourself with the day to day look or anything like that. Like, this is truly is a process that you have to look at over time. You know, if you have to on a week to week level, if not week to week, you know, if you can hold off and sort of take the sort of measurement, like the crude ones, I should say, you know, with the scale or whatnot, where there's way too much random variation and fluctuation going on. You know, if you can hold off on the scale for a couple weeks, maybe that's all the better, because it's that progress over time that matters, not the day to day, as far as, you know, depending on what you ate the night before, you know, your weight may be up the next morning. And a lot of people I know have trouble dealing with that psychologically and being okay with seeing that type of variation. And, you know, that's my first thing, is just knowing that it's about just sticking to the plan and being consistent as much as you can over time. And that's what's really going to bring changes that, in my opinion, are long lasting. I mean, I have, like I said, I have records going back 12 years now that sort of show that. If you look at the day to day or the week to week, it looks insane. But then you see, you know, spread out over the years, and I'm just always going down. I'm always improving in some way or another. And I think that's huge for many people, you know, especially bigger guys and women that, you know, they could enter a contest, but they're maybe going to need two or three contests to get down to where they're really happy with. That's fine. You know, you just have to keep working at it and understand that, you know, it's going to be a little bit more time than what we'd all like. Obviously, the 8 days to abs are nonsense for people that have a lot of work to do, and you know, you just kind of have to be okay with that, I guess. Which obviously isn't easy, you know, but it's something that we kind of have to come to if we're going to make that type of big change.
I'll add to that, and I'll say no matter how much weight you have to lose or how far you think you have to go, the amount of time it'll take to do it will be way shorter than the rest of your life.
Oh yeah,
You
and
know, even if it
completely.
takes you 2 years, you're likely going to live a lot longer than two more after that. So it always when you look back, it'll be like, well, yeah, it took me a couple of years, but now it's been 20 years and I've still been in this shit. Like it's
Oh
always going to be
yeah.
a smaller portion of your life. It's not going to take you your whole life. It's once you just get it done, it'll always be smaller than the rest of your life. But if you spend decades floundering, you can spend your whole life trying. But once you get it done, you look back and like, yeah, I did that. Like your major weight loss happened all like in a short time frame as compared to the rest of your life. It's not like it took you 20 years to do it. And now you're
Yeah,
refining.
exactly. So I think that that's something that, you know, people definitely can should work towards. The other thing I realized, especially in the last sort of year, has been that permission to be lighter, in the sense that, you know, if you're not happy with how you look, even though the scale may say something, then you're not happy. Like, that, you know, the number itself shouldn't be the end point as far as what the scale says. And that was something I had to deal with tremendously. That was sort of part of why I dove into the contest, with the fact that I was like, okay, well, I'm 165 and everyone says that's great, but frankly, I don't feel great about it. It's not the look that I ultimately want. And, you know, I think that that's something, especially for guys, because we're so pressured to be big, and, you know, all you always hear, oh, so-and-so's 200 pounds, the mythical 200-pound number that we always hear about. But frankly, if we're not on something and we're also 5'9 or shorter, 200 pounds is not realistic and really not at all correct for what we're going to end up at. And consequently, like, my biggest thing that at one point I told my fiance was, I don't care about, I've reached this point where I don't care about what the scale number says, anything more than just the curiosity to see what it says. Because really, to me right now, it is the look in the mirror, it is that AI number, it's the taper, you know, it's my shoulder to waist, it's that that matters to me, not at all, you know, what the scale says.
And ironically, once you get used to how this all works and you start really understanding the rule of sevens and how big people really are, and what, then you develop a skill to actually predict how heavy a guy is at his correct AI for his height. And then all of a sudden you readjust your conception of weight to the point where you get it. You're like, oh yeah, a guy at his AI who's 5'9", yeah, be like anywhere between, you know, 150, 160, something. You know what I mean? It just becomes like, makes more sense. And you know what? We can do it in other fields, like boxing, like all the different boxing weight classes. You can be like, yeah, those guys are about 140, 150, like just depending on their class
boxing,
and their height.
Wrestling,
only the heavy, you know, only wrestling. The giant heavyweight guys who are all above 6 feet are the guys above 200 pounds. Like, there's way more guys below 200 pounds in things like pro boxing and wrestling than there are above. Like, all the Ultimate Fighters, like, almost none of them are too, there's just a few guys that are actually lean in that category. It's, I don't understand why all guys think they can be that way. And they're all tall. They're all, like, they're just big.
And it's
just
funny how we are okay with, like, that. That's another point where it's disconnected. You know, you see that, and you're like, yeah, you know, so-and-so weighed in at this weight or whatever. But then, like, nobody stops in their day-to-day life and says to themselves, well, yeah, so maybe it's okay that I'm this way. Or maybe, obviously, I'm not looking all that great in the mirror, and I'm 180 right now. Clearly, just because I'm 180 and that guy weighed in at 180 doesn't mean that I am the same composition as him. Like,
exactly.
The number itself ends up getting so tied to everything when it's nonsense, really.
Yeah, it's got to be personalized.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge thing that I think a lot of people, especially guys with coming down from heavier weights and sort of having to deal with that, is a big thing that is good to know. You know, I mean, that's huge to be okay with that, and to just sort of let the look guide you and let your, you know, your waist and shoulders guide you to what you're trying to get, and not at all the scale, which doesn't measure the quality and the composition of your body. It just measures gross weight. That's it, nothing else.
Okay.
And I think that that's something women too, you know, sort of
100% on both sides. I think so. I think that's a good place to leave it off. Like, I like that point about let your shape guide you and forget about the scale, because it's just not gonna help. All right, so that was a good one. Congratulations for placing in the contest, and for
thank you.
Yeah, and for Rob Robinson, I'm John Barbin, and that's your Adonis Index podcast.